Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Hashtag Prediction Thursday. It's here. Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com radio. What? I thought there'd be some applause or, you know, some yelling or screaming or something somewhere, you know, because anytime you have a contest where you're going to actually, like, you know, give something away or try to give something away, we keep trying. Okay, that works too. But we keep trying to give Media Guide yearbooks away and nobody wants them. Nobody wants them. We've done this for what? 14 weeks now? 15 weeks now? This will be the 15th week, right? Nothing yet. We've had some close, but close only counts in horseshoes, hand grenades, and nuclear weapons. So you got to play to win. It's that simple. So if you have some thoughts on the Patriots and Miami Dolphins coming up on Sunday, let her rip. Many different ways, of course, you can get us here on the program. 855-PATS-500 on the telephone. That's 855-728-7500. Web radio at patriots.com, on email at JRBroadcaster, Twitter, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E is the last name. On Facebook, submit the friend request if you haven't done it yet, and we'll join up and we'll talk some football. It's that simple. Now, a couple of things about the game matchup. And coming up on the program in 20 minutes, Armando Salguero, who is the Dolphins reporter, columnist for the Miami Herald, and a frequent contributor here on the program. He will join us to give us the very latest on the state of the Dolphins at 7-6, fighting for their very playoff lives this Sunday here against the Patriots. And as we've talked about already this week, it certainly seems that it's going to take 10 wins to get into the postseason, even from a wild card perspective. And the Dolphins are 7-6, and while they might be favored in their last two, this is the one that really matters. This is the one that would get them over the hump. This is the one they need. Because if they don't get this one on Sunday against the Patriots, the other two might not matter at all. Now, it hasn't been that often. In fact, it hasn't been in a long while since the Patriots were swept by a divisional opponent. Keep in mind, I know we all forget, we have a tendency to sort of just, you know, cover it with dirt because it was so long ago and because a lot of us consider this to be an aberration to this entire season. But the Dolphins did win back in week one, 33-20 in Miami. A game in which the Patriots were shut out in the second half. Had a halftime lead and then proceeded to blow it in the second half. Okay, but that doesn't count. That was then, this is now. I get it. I understand your point. But the Dolphins don't think of it like that. They know since they won before, they can win again. And I think they're going to take offense to the fact that they're underdogs here, and most everybody says, the Patriots will win this game. I don't think anybody gives the Dolphins a chance. And again, I'm just going to the other side here, playing devil's advocate overall, which is something I think I do pretty well, and a lot of you would probably grind your teeth at that one, but that's what we're supposed to do here. So you can see both sides of the story, then you make up your own mind. You come up with your own opinion. I can't imagine this sits well with the Dolphins at all. The Patriots haven't been swept by a divisional opponent since they were swept by both Miami and New York back in 2000. Think about that for a second. It's been 14 years now. So back in 2000, both Miami and both New York went 2-0 against the Patriots. And that's the last time New England's been swept by anybody within the division. Miami now has a chance to do that. And they certainly have impetus and momentum and desperation and everything else on their side, with the possible exception of, you know, the talent end of it, which certainly is important. But all I'm saying is that you should not discount the Dolphins, even here at Gillette, where the Patriots have a significant home record. New England has won 15 straight regular season games at home. It's the longest streak that is active right now in the NFL. For home wins. and it's tied for the second longest streak in the last 10 years. Picked that one up from our friend Mike Reese. So because of that, there's a little bit of, I think the Patriots are certainly in a good place, but again, there's an opportunity here for Miami. And here's what concerns me a little about the matchup overall. Some of this we'll jump into today with Armando, and then hour number two of the program will be the guru, Russell Baxter, as we'll go through week 15 in the NFL. Miami's mid-range passing game, mid to short-range passing game, I think is the concern for the Patriots defensively in this one. While the Dolphins ran almost at will, particularly in the second half against the Patriots back in September, if you'll recall, they've sort of morphed because of the injuries at running back into a, for lack of a better phrase, dink and dunk passing attack that the Patriots certainly know well over the past few years. Now, since the ninth week of this season, Ryan Tannehill leads the NFL in completion percentage at almost 72%. See that number in the stats this week? 72%. So that tells me he's probably throwing a lot of short-range passes, right? To back that up, Tannehill's average air yards per attempt, 6.7. That's the average length of the pass attempt, 6.7 yards per throw. Now, that's nothing. That is definitely dink, if not dunk. And among the 33 qualifying quarterbacks, that ranks 29th among the 33 qualifying quarterbacks in the NFL. So, he likes to get it to the short receivers. He doesn't go deep. The Patriots don't go deep either. So this might be a battle of wills in short-range territory. Do I think the Patriots should be favored? Absolutely. Do I think the Patriots are going to win the game? I feel they should. I'm just pointing out these are the areas of concern for New England. Looking at it from a defensive point of view, where Miami can excel, I certainly wouldn't be surprised to see Miami continue to try to run the ball in New England and try to move the ball with a short passing game and see if they can't get the Patriots to commit and then try to go over the top. This is what the Patriots, I think, need to expect. We had a caller yesterday here on the program talk about how, you know, Tannehill and the Dolphins in the past have certainly burnt the Patriots with read option. I certainly think you could see some of that on Sunday. In a given situation, think you could see some of it. Here's the other thing that concerns me, I think, a bit about Sunday's matchup. And again, you know, all things are relative, but at this time of year, teams have a tendency to beat themselves as opposed to beating others. And by that, I mean, this is where, you know, the turnovers, kicking games, special teams miscues are magnified. And in a lot of instances, unless you have a superlative play, a team, you know, with a bobbled snap or a juggled ball or just, you know, lack of respect for carrying the football and a fumble occurs, you know, in a scrum, you know, I think you can control these. I think these are controllable by a team. And so if you don't control it, well, then that's one on you. Miami doesn't hurt themselves that much. Off of their turnovers, opponents have only scored 23 points, and that's least in the NFL. Now, I did not know that before earlier today when going through some of the numbers. 23 points off of turnovers scored by Miami opponents this year. That's extraordinary. That's why, that's one of the main reasons why the Dolphins are at 7-6, in spite of some of their, you know, inadequacies, let's say, that I'm sure that are apparent to you and apparent to others who follow pro football. This is why they're still competitive. This is why, primarily, they're still in the running and why they're still in the conversation for postseason play. Because they don't beat themselves. And I have every reason to think they're going to come into Foxborough on Sunday and not beat themselves again. So it's going to be up to New England to do what? Win the game outright. Can't expect Miami to beat themselves. Now, you might get a turnover or two, which would be a good start, because, frankly, the last 2 weeks, the Patriots are minus in the plus-minus category against Green Bay and San Diego. Patriots have dropped from a tie from first to third in the giveaway takeaway in the NFL. Now, that's still great, but I'm saying is they've slipped a little bit because they've turned it over more than they've received themselves over the last 2 weeks. And with Miami coming in not beating themselves, this should be a point of emphasis for the Patriots defensively. They need to get after the Dolphins and try to force turnovers. Strip. Strip sack. Pick off. Block a kick like they did last week, because I think from a mental standpoint more than anything, Brandon Bolden's punt and subsequent, you know, knocking out of Brian Cyphers of San Diego in that game last Sunday was a huge mental turning point in the game. And so the Patriots defensively need to find a way to have that mental turning point in the game on Sunday and not allow Miami to stay in it mentally. See, Miami was in the game in September mentally. Even though the Patriots had a lead at halftime, the Patriots did nothing really to deliver a blow. And then they controlled better than controlled. They dominated the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball in the second half. And as soon as Miami said, wow, we can win this game, then you saw them just take off. And the Patriots did nothing. They were powerless. They did nothing to stop them. That was one of the worst games in terms of mid-game adjustment that the Patriots have had all year. Fortunately, they haven't had too many episodes like that since, but they did have it then. So I kind of hope that that sticks in New England's craw just a little bit. They have to remember, you know, that, you know, Miami is capable of taking it to us, and Miami is capable of winning the game. And if we leave the ball on the turf ourselves, or we're careless with the ball in throwing it around, Tom Brady admitted he was at the end of the first half last week against San Diego, then Miami can turn it around. They can. They absolutely can. I'm interested into your point of view. I'm interested in your take. Where will this game on Sunday, where will it fall? What will be the difference maker in this game? Anything that I've just talked about? Or do you have another area, another point to make about offense, defense, special teams, what Miami brings to the table, what the Patriots now have developed over the course of the last 14 weeks since playing Miami back in week one. So with your score prediction, why? A simple why. That's what we're looking for here today, as best you can. 855-PATS-500, 855-728-7500, the toll-free number, webradio at patriots.com. Give me a follow on Twitter, at JR Broadcaster, John.Rook on Facebook. All right, we're loaded up here. Let's lead it off with our buddy Trey in Memphis. Hey, Trey, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Good, pal. How's it going with you today?
Oh, man, hey, just a typical Thursday, man. Always looking to tune in and talk to you.
Thank you, sir.
Always, I mean, man, it's always an honor, you know. So,
thank you, and it's an honor to talk to you. I'm glad you're interested. Appreciate it. What do you got?
Oh, man, you covered some great points, especially about, you know, Tannehill and everything that they was able to accomplish against the Patriots in week one. And, you know, I said everybody should take everything into a consideration that you, with the points that you brought up. I mean, they, Ryan Tannehill have had a good high percentage passing, I think, yeah, over, I think, like, with 70.5, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, and I just really feel that this Patriots team is better prepared, you know, to face them at this point. I mean, because you look at week one, you know, the Patriots put a team on the field that was, you know, were practically new to each other. You know, they had a three rookie offensive linemen starting, then, you know, you, of course, you had Revis starting. You know, he was still, you know, new. He's a new Patriot. You know, of course, Gronk, he was, you know, Gronk wasn't quite Gronk, and, you know, he was still trying to, you know, rehab off of his, still in the midst of rehabbing his knee, you know, as far as getting stronger. So, I mean, you know, we still, you know, we still have a lot to take away from that game, as far as, you know, some positives from that game. And, you know, I just really don't, you know, that second half collapse, you know, I hate to use, you know, that heat as an excuse, but, man, it just looks like the pass was out of gas. So with that being said, John, This is a totally different defense that the Dolphins are going to see. I mean, you know, they're looking at a defense now that, you know, starting to shape up in the championship form. And, you know, they look a lot faster on defense now. And I think that that's a plus for us. And then, you know, with us having Vince, Silver, Salinga, now you throw Allen Branch in the mix along with, you know, you look as far as on the defensive line, and then hopefully, you know, it'll be a big plus to get Chandler Jones back. I mean, you talking about a totally different defensive line, John.
Okay, so, yeah, and I understand that, Trey. The Dolphins are facing a different team, just like the Patriots are probably going to face a different team from week one in Miami. So where do you feel – so you feel like that's the major difference here in terms of swinging the game?
Yes, I feel like that's the major difference, John, you know, as far as, you know, that's the biggest difference for me. I mean, because you just look at it, the front seven – alone, I mean, you know, if you go to the linebacker spot now, you know, even with a team Ireland, you know, you throwing in Casillas, I mean, you know, those guys add a little more speed, you know, and I mean, and a little more depth. Cause you look at it, gentlemen, we was lacking a lot of depth, and you know, we was not able to throw in good sub packages because, you know, the defense just, I mean, they looked ridiculous, man. I mean, you know, cause you had a lot of guys, you know, weren't able to come off the field. So now with you having this depth now, and, you know, you're able to, you know, to throw in these different packages. And then, you know, you go to the offensive side of the football.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we didn't have Tim Wright. And, you know, Brandon LaFell was still trying to find his way. And so, I mean, you know, I just feel like, John, you know, this is a game, you know, that we should take serious. I mean, this is a game that we should take even more serious than the San Diego Chargers game. So,
I think I agree with you. I believe I said that last week even.
Yeah. I mean, but just like I said, John, man, I mean, you know, and one thing that I do take into a consideration is the Miami Dolphins played that game with three linebackers. You know, they started the game with one linebacker, you know, with one regular starter. And he got hurt, I want to say, midway through the first quarter. So they had backup linebackers on the field. I mean, but, you know, hey, there was then. I mean, when I'm looking at this game, John, and I really feel that the Patriots are going to be focused. And I know, you know, they're looking for redemption. I mean, because, you know, losing to the Dolphins is what started all this, you know, the end of the Brady Belichick era. So,
sure.
You know, it really started there.
That's true. That's
so,
true.
With that being said, John, I'm going to give you my score. I think the Patriots will come out, try to establish the run. And I think what's going to happen is, you know, we're going to take those short passes away, and we're going to force Tannehill to be accurate and kind of push the ball up the field, something that he's has yet to do. So that's the reason why Jarvis Landry is leading the team in reception, because he's catching a lot of screens, and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, you know, you really haven't seen a Mike Wallace sighting. So,
okay.
My prediction, John, is I'm gonna say 43-20.
So you think the Patriots put the points up on the board?
Yeah, I think those points are going to come up. Man, I think what's going to happen is, you know, it's going to be a battle. I say about a quarter and a half, was maybe two quarters. And I think, you know, the Patriots is going to be up too much at the end, man. I mean, because they know the Patriots have a lot to lose. They have a lot to lose. And I think that, you know, with them being playing a lot of playoff caliber teams and, you know, being in dog fights, I think, you know, we've overcome a lot of adversity. So, and I think this is going to help us prevail.
All right, 43-20, says Trey in Memphis. You're a good man, Trey. Thank you, sir. Dana in Connecticut is up next. Dana, you're in the playbook.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Sure, Dana.
I got a couple observations, and I have one question at the end I wanted to pose.
Go.
I think the Patriots are a completely different team than they were week one, as the Dolphins are, but much more so with the Patriots, the way Gronk is playing, and and the addition of Blount and just the emergence of LaSalle offensively, defensively in particular, Collins really took his game to another level this past week. So I think the defense is locking down. I don't think it's going to be close. So I'll give you my score at the end.
Okay.
But I'm concerned with a couple things. Number one, I'm really concerned with Tom Brady, his body language and his emotional outburst on the sideline. It's almost like he's in a panic mode. He's pressing. He's a little bit off, you know, at times. He's kind of streaky, and that's not him. When he's on for the whole game. When he's off, he's really bad. And it's very few and far between. But this year, he's been really erratic. And I think he's pressing, and his outbursts are kind of almost unnerving the rest of the team. And he's kind of calmed down. I mean, I know the door is closing, and, you know, he expected to have his fourth ring by now, and he's pressing to get that. I think he'll relax if they do get it this year and play a couple more years and go for five. But I think somebody needs to have a talk with him and say, listen, especially if I was his wife, I'd say, hon, you can't do that on TV. You know, the F word, you know, your whole image is, I mean, look how cool and calm Aaron Rodgers is, and even Rivers, and Manning is always classy. And I'm starting not to like Brady's, his persona on the sideline. And I love him personally, but someone needs to have a little chat with him as far as that goes. I think the Patriots are gonna put a good beat down on Miami. I think the score is gonna be 37-13. I don't think it's gonna be close. I think they're gonna move the ball. And the question I have for you, and I really appreciate you letting me go on here, is
sure.
What's going on with Blount? I see he hasn't practiced, and it's not injury related. Is everything okay with him? Because he's really a big key. He's a big man with small man skill, and that's the difference between him and Greg.
Yeah, everything's fine. He was in Pittsburgh yesterday for that hearing on the marijuana charge when he was in Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay, good. I did read that, and I was hoping that's what it was. I was hoping it wasn't something else.
He was back at practice today. The only person missing from practice today was Easley.
Okay, yeah, he's got issues with the leg. I hope I really like the defensive line, too, with Branch and, I can't say his name, Salinga.
Salinga.
Salinga. I think him and Branch are really going to help anchor that line along with Wilfork, and I think they're going to be really tough up the middle because they're going to tie up those guards, and that's going to allow Hightower, if he gets back, which I was going to ask you how he's doing, and Collins to really blast the middle through the gaps there.
Well, he absolutely was back, so again, we'll find out, you know, with the next injury report, you know, if he, you know, stays status quo. We won't know for sure until they get ready to do the inactive report, which only comes out 90 minutes before kickoff on Sunday. So we'll just have to wait and see, but he is back out on the field. Like I said, the only one that wasn't at practice today or spotted at the beginning of practice today was Dominic Easley.
What's your feeling on my comments about Brady? Do you agree or are you disagree?
Well, I have to tell you that I think, you know, we discussed this at length yesterday, Dana, and amongst a lot of fans, and I think most everybody is they're willing to give Tom a big fat pass on this, and the reason they are is because they understand that he's a competitor, that he's fiery, and that he's only really trying to, you know, encourage his teammates, and while it may or may not be a copacetic thing to do if you're trying to set an example for younger people, and I think everybody understands that, really that kind of responsibility should be left individually to parenting and, you know, those kind of things. And I think everybody is willing to give Tom a pass because they know that he is a good family man and that they know he does do a lot of charity work and he, you know, has a great relationship with his teammates and people look up to him. And I just don't think that it's a big deal.
I hear what you're saying. And believe me, I just don't want to be misunderstood. I'm not saying that he's not a good guy.
Of course.
I think he's a great guy, and he's had a terrific track record on and off the field. I just sense a pressing and it's just a little bit of pressure, and I'm just hoping that doesn't transfer into some of the players that, you know, like the Amendolas that are kind of deer caught in headlights trying to trying to...
I don't think that's the case at all. I think a lot of those guys really look up to Tom in that regard. Yeah. And if you read the ESPN Magazine article that Rob Gronkowski did with Lindsey Zarniak, you'll kind of get a sense for how not only Gronk feels, but how his teammates feel about Tom.
Good. Excellent. I that's good to hear. I'm glad you put me to ease at that because I was a little bit nervous about that. I don't want to see him pressed. I want him to relax. I want the team to be relaxed as well.
I believe that is the case, but don't want him too relaxed right about now.
No, I think they'll be fine. I think they're going to finish 13-3, and I think the road goes through New England. And you know, I'm concerned about. I'm hoping Seattle gets knocked off and way ahead of here. I mean, if we do get there, I'd love to. Atone for our three losses, get Kansas City
sure,
in the playoffs
sure.
and get Green Bay
sure.
in the Super Bowl and take those three losses and avenge all three of them. That'd be the best scenario.
Absolutely. All right, and what was your score, 37-13 again?
37-13.
Got it.
Yes.
Got it.
Thank you very much. I'll talk to you in a few days.
Thanks, Dana. Dana in Connecticut joining us. All right. Hang on the phones. Those of you who are on the phones, there is an open line available at 855-PATS-500, 855-728-7500. But we do want to take a couple of moments here to get the latest on the Miami Dolphins. And Armando Salguero, who's a longtime writer for the Miami Herald and covering the NFL and the Dolphins, and a contributor here inside the Playbook, joins us from South Florida. Armando, great to visit with you again. Thanks for a couple of minutes today, pal.
My pleasure, John. Anytime.
So let's start with I guess the obvious question is, how has this Miami team changed from the team that beat New England back in week one? Most obvious to the eye, since a lot of times we kind of tend to fade away from South Florida for a while until we get ready to play you guys again.
Right. Well, there's been some good changes and some bad changes. If you want to look at, you know, the positives, they probably have guys that, you know, they didn't have against the Patriots early on. Deion Jordan was suspended for that last game.
Right.
Rashad Jones was suspended for that game. So those two guys are back. Obviously, you know, they have found a spread option type of offense where actually Ryan Tannehill, the quarterback, is probably their second best threat
mm-hmm.
as far as running the football. There are some bad changes as well. You know, they've got some injuries. They lately haven't been able to stop the run. They've given up 661 yards in the last three games.
Why do you think that is? Why have they all of a sudden not been able to stop the run when they were very good at it at the first part of the year?
They're not tackling well. Their linebackers are not hitting the right gaps, not taking the proper angles. Their secondary is not tackling well. And so you've got issues.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big deal. And they cannot hit, for the life of them, a long pass. They just can't because their offensive line isn't as good as what it was against the Patriots. Brandon Albert, their left tackle, is out for the year.
Right. Right. So it's just been a little bit different road to hoe. And frankly, these kind of things happen during the course of a season. And it's how well teams adapt to the injuries and how teams sort of, go through this metamorphosis through the course of a season. And some adapt better than others, right?
Absolutely. And the Dolphins, you know, for the most part, they're a competitive team. In fact, Joe Philbin said today, you know, the last 10 games, we've been very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes games at Denver, at Detroit, against Green Bay down here. But the problem is the goal is not to be competitive. The goal has always been and will forever be to win.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost on a last play type of deal against Green Bay. They lost on a last play type of deal against Detroit. They lost on a last play type of deal against Denver. So all those three last play type of deals, while very exciting, while very competitive, they're losses.
Yeah. Right. And the key now is to figure out how to turn that kind of a close loss into a close win or better, and they haven't been able to find that the proper switch or that right button to push yet.
No, they haven't, and I'm not sure, you know, it's getting late.
Yeah, yeah.
They had a de facto playoff game against Baltimore last week, and Baltimore basically just outclassed them all the way through. They still believe that they have something to play for. Obviously, if they win the last three games, they'll be 10-6, and maybe they'll be a wild card team, maybe not. But obviously, it's no longer in their hands. They need some help, and I have a hard time believing that they can win their last three.
Well, I would think that if you compared them with some of the other teams in similar positions, certainly like Buffalo, for instance, within the division, that the Dolphins have the better road, even though the road does start in Foxborough this week. But how much does winning way back in week one help them, even from a confidence standpoint, but really more practically in a preparation standpoint for the game this week?
Well, I mean, the Dolphins don't have any sort of lack of confidence against the New England Patriots. They've beaten them twice in a row. And
true.
I know that that's hard to fathom, but that's the fact. Twice in a row, they've beaten the Patriots. But this seems to be, this is indeed a different Patriots team. You know, Rob Gronkowski is not on a snap count anymore. you know, Tim Wright probably knows the offense now. You've got, you know, guys that are just weren't there. Blunt was not there earlier.
Right.
Browner was not there earlier. All of a sudden, Revis is comfortable and they're using him differently. So, and oh, by the way, the offensive line has changed in the interior. So they have things that they saw in the first game that I suppose they can still use, but this is a different team. I will say one thing. The Dolphins in that long ago victory in September,
mm-hmm.
their defensive ends dominated Nate Solder and Sebastian Vollmer.
They did.
It was a domination. And so I would suppose, you know, nobody's changed. All the characters are the same. Let's see what happens on Sunday.
I could not agree more, and I think that's got to be a huge key, at least the first one that I'll be watching, is to see how well those individual matchups have improved or not improved for both sides of the football. Armando Salguero, who covers the Dolphins for the Miami Herald, joining us here in the playbook, noticed that, you know, and in fact, I recall back in September, you lost a couple of linebackers during the course of the game, and then your guys had no problems, you know, coming in and filling the gap, and know that there's been some linebacker problems recently, not only with, as you suggest, with the missed tackles and some of the bad angles and things, but also with injuries again. Any reason to believe that they can't overcome those deficiencies again this week against New England?
This is going to be weird sounding, but the Dolphins are down this week, starting linebackers, and yet they will have, if those guys don't play, Koemisi and Jelani Jenkins, they will start against the Patriots with one more starting linebacker, Philip Wheeler, than what they ended the game against the Patriots the last time.
That is weird. Yeah.
The last time, all three starters were done.
Mm-hmm.
Wheeler didn't play. Danelle Allaby went out for the season after 18 snaps, and Koemisi went out with an ankle injury after 17 snaps.
Mm-hmm. So because of this now, it stands to reason that at least Miami should be better prepared, correct or not?
Yeah, it stands to reason that Miami should be better than 7-6 too. <They're not>. You know, if you can beat the New England Patriots and you beat San Diego 37-0.
Yep.
I mean, you've beaten two pretty good quarterbacks, no?
Yes, you have. Yes, you have.
You took Aaron Rodgers down to the last play, and for all intents and purposes, you know, if Courtland Finnegan, they had a fake spike play, and Aaron Rodgers is being hailed for the genius of the fake spike play. But the fact of the matter is, if Courtland Finnegan makes the tackle that he was supposed to make on that fake spike play, inbounds, the wide receiver, Jordy Nelson, is down, and the game is over, and the Dolphins win.
Got it.
But he pushed the guy out of bounds.
Mm-hmm.
Whoops.
Yeah. Right. Whoops is right. The offense, as you talked about with some of the read and the spread option, was that out of necessity? Was that a wrinkle? Why do you think that has integrated itself to becoming a pretty potent part of the attack thus far? And I think it's got to give the Patriots at least a little pause for concern, because as I recall, a few years ago, it was the Wildcat formation that Miami broke out against New England that kicked them in the butt up here.
Yeah, I think that there's a little bit of, we're going to make the opponent spend some time on this, because it is more a college offense than a pro-style offense, for sure. But it's also assignment football, and the last couple of weeks, the defenses have been good on their assignments. The Jets were very good on it. The Ravens were very good on it. It didn't work very well. Mm-hmm. The Dolphins scored one touchdown offensively in each of those games. So, with all wrinkles, defenses catch up eventually. And we're in December now. And so it seems, for the time being anyway, the last two teams, the Jets and the Ravens, have caught up.
Mm-hmm. They have. All right, so now this team doesn't throw the ball deep exceedingly well, but, there's a guy like Tannehill that I talked about earlier with our fans here that, he throws the short to mid-range pass pretty well. He, since week 9, leads the league in passing completion percentage at about 72% of his throws in that regard. Why has this team not been able to stretch the field? Has that been a necessity that has sort of kept this team from breaking through where they are right now at 7-6?
Yeah, the reason that it hasn't happened, the primary reason, in my opinion, is, once they lost Brandon Albert at left tackle, they had to move the right tackle over to left tackle, Juwan James, and then they put Dallas Thomas at right tackle. And now all of a sudden, Dallas Thomas, who is probably a good backup guard, is playing the starting right tackle, and last week he gave up 3.5 sacks to Elvis Dumervil and Terrell Suggs, and before that, Mario Williams had 3 sacks against them, against him personally. So they're trying to protect Dallas Thomas and the blocking scheme by throwing shorter passes, by mm-hmm. getting rid of the ball faster.
Okay.
And when you cannot sit back there, you cannot have Ryan Tannehill sit back there and wait for long pass plays to develop, even though you have Mike Wallace, who is a very good deep threat, even though Brian Hartline over his career has been a decent deep threat. You just don't have the time to do it, and so they've stopped.
Right. So they just have gone with what works and what has presented itself to them. And I'm wondering now, based on what New England has done defensively, if the opportunity might not at least present itself for Tannehill to take a shot or two, because he's liable to see some man coverage deep without it's help over the top.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because the Patriots, you look at them, the way they get pressure on a passer is a lot different than what these other teams that I just mentioned.
Sure.
They get pressure on a passer.
Mm-hmm.
The Patriots kind of do it with a team concept type of deal. The Ravens, they don't have a Dumervil with 14, 15 sacks. They don't have a Suggs. They don't have a DeMarcus Ware or a Von Miller. So maybe the Dolphins can block it up. I don't know. But when it's an elite pass rusher against Dallas Thomas at right tackle, that is a bad matchup for the Miami Dolphins. And it's been a bad matchup even when they use a tight end, typically Deion Sims, to help them out.
Right. Armando, bottom line here is that, the Dolphins have the chance to do something that nobody's been able to do in a decade and a half, and that's sweep the Patriots from within the division in the same year. And yet, the Patriots, even if the Dolphins win this game on Sunday, they're still going to have a worse record overall than New England. Bottom line, what does it say about this Miami team?
They don't maximize their talent. Clearly they don't. You sweep the Patriots, you blow out the San Diego Chargers by 37 points, you're a play or two away from beating those other teams that I mentioned previously in our conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You should be better than 500. way better. Maybe they will be at the end of the year if they can win the last three. But if they can't, it suggests that you're on a mediocre treadmill kind of situation. And folks down here are getting a little annoyed with that.
Do fans, you know, because in New England, the fans here, they struggle back and forth between the urge to go for it, you know, and get that one good player that's going to put this New England team over the top and get them back into a Super Bowl, the chance to win it. Or the other issue is remaining relevant and just staying in the Derby and having a chance. As long as you're in the tournament, you got a chance to win. How do Miami fans feel about, you know, just being good as opposed to being championship good?
The Dolphins aren't good. So I'll let you know when they reach the first plateau, then we can talk about the next plateau. Last year they were 8-8. That's not good. That's mediocre. The year before they were 7-9. They're 7-6 now. All of that is mediocre. And I get it. This team has not been really good for a very long time. It's not been Super Bowl good for 40 years. It's not been playoff every year good since maybe 2000, 2001, about the time that the Patriots, you know, had their ascent. But this team should be or seems to be good enough to make the playoffs. If you look at them on paper, if you look at their talent, they should be good enough. And yet, here we are.
Yep. Does Joe Philbin keep his job?
That's the question that the next three games will you know, determine, because, again, they didn't go to the playoffs last year. They didn't go to the playoffs the year before in Joe Philbin's first year. And if they don't do it again this year, that's 3 years and you haven't gone to the playoffs.
Yep.
And you were hired to go to the playoffs.
Right. It's a good question, one that may begin to start answering itself this weekend. Armando, thank you, as always, for the time. Safe travels up this way, and bring your mittens.
Thank you, John. Always a pleasure, and always a pleasure to visit Boston. It's a great town.
Thank you very, very much. Safe travels. Armando Salguero covers the Dolphins for the Miami Herald, joining us here in the playbook. So what do you say about that? The Dolphins are a little down on themselves, I think, and certainly fans in Miami are down on the Dolphins because they haven't really answered the bell like they thought they should have, primarily after getting off to such a great start this year and beating New England 33-20 back in September. And yet I get the impression from everybody I've talked to this week, whether it's been on this show or friends in general public, that, oh, there's no way the Patriots are going to lose this game. Still feel like that? Still feel like the Dolphins can't win, that they can't get out of their own way? Curious to know what you think. Let's continue with Prediction Thursday. Isaac in Fort Lauderdale, you're up next. Hello, Isaac.
Hey, John, what's up?
You are.
Hey, I was going to call and say, give you my prediction, but the last guy who called in, I think it was Dave from Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was somebody in Maine, but he made comments about Brady needing to calm down on the sideline. I totally disagree with that because I believe when Brady does that on the sideline, the other guys, like the young guys on the team, they look at that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, that's part of Brady being a leader with his team, the way he acts on the sideline. So
I would agree with that. I tend to agree with your point of view on that, Isaac. Absolutely.
Yeah, because I think when young guys see Tom Brady been playing the NFL so as long as he's been playing,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he's still that passionate about the game. I think that's a good sign to a younger player from the team.
Right.
So I would disagree about him getting calmed down on the sideline.
Right. So, and I think most people actually do agree with you, Isaac, that they like the fieriness in Tom. You know, they like that. And, that as long as, you know, you keep things in the proper context, that, it's perfectly acceptable for him to, you know, slip and drop an F-bomb every now and then.
Yeah, and if it's a problem with him dropping the F-bomb, why they still put the cameras over there?
Well, but the cameras are, we talked about this yesterday, the cameras are putting it on over there because they know, A, that it's entertaining, and B, they know fans want to see it. And so if they want to give the fans what they want, then they're going to have the cameras pointed on him. It's that simple.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right, what do you think about the game, Isaac?
All right, about the game against Miami, I didn't get a chance to call until PFW in progress. No, I don't agree with those guys at all about this game. I know Andy don't think that this game is going to be a blowout. I just don't see the Patriots scoring that many points. So I think it's going to be a dogfight right down to the end. My prediction of the score is going to be 17-10 Patriots.
Woo, you got a low-scoring one. Okay.
Yeah, it's going to be a Dolphins. I just don't see a scoring.
17-10.
Game at all.
All right, you're definitely thinking outside the box. I like it, Isaac. It's good.
Yeah. It's going to be a tough thing. I think it's going to come down to Miami. They're going to be the last chance to try to send the game to overtime.
Right.
And the defense will come up with a big turnover to end the game. So that's my prediction for this game. 17-10 Patriots. Lock it in.
17-10. Lock it in. Isaac, you the man. Next up is Sean in Vancouver. Hey, Sean, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John. Good to speak with you again.
You too, Sean.
Now, John, I'm going to sound like a homer, and you know me. I'm not really like that. I try and take these things as objectively as I possibly can. But
liar, liar, pants on fire.
You know, I picked Green Bay to win it a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it's all right.
So, anyway, I'm just looking at this, and I don't see really how the Dolphins will win. I mean, I know anything is possible, but I see this as a Patriots victory. I'm looking at how they match up, and the Patriots just have too much talent. And despite the fact that Miami does really well against the Patriots in Miami, I think there's something like 31-15 against the Patriots in South Florida. Well, in New England, they're 17-31
mm-hmm.
lifetime. So mm-hmm. they don't like coming up here, and I'm definitely don't like coming here when it's going to be cold. They did win in 2006 in a meaningless game for the 2005 season when it was already over, and they took Brady out after the first quarter. But
mm-hmm.
Generally, they don't win in New England. And New England, what did you say? It was 15 in a row that they won?
15 in a row at home, regular yeah, season. So yep,
that's something. But just looking at the team, from New England to play the Dolphins, they really just need to stack up the middle and force Tannehill to try and throw downfield, because he doesn't do that. He likes to have his 70% completion within mm-hmm. 10 yards of the line of scrimmage and mm-hmm. just clog that up. Last time, Moreno ran all over the Patriots for, 146 yards, something like that. He's not playing.
Right.
As mentioned before, Brandon Albert is no longer there. The Patriots are able to get more pressure on the quarterback. And offensively, Gronk is much better now than he was on basically limited to mostly pass protection.
Mm-hmm.
For now, the Patriots have a strong physical run tack, which the Dolphins are poor against. So you're going to hand the ball to Blunt, 25 times, and Brady is going to use a play action, and Miami isn't good at that against that either. So it's a homer pick, you could say it, but I just looking at all the evidence, I'm going with New England 35-9.
35-9. I like the odd score, but 9 really for Miami. So the Patriots defense is going to be on the job, huh?
They're not going to allow a touchdown. They're just not.
Okay.
Stuff it up, and maybe the Dolphins will get close a few times, but they won't. They won't get into the end zone.
I like this. I like the boldness of the prediction, though, Sean.
Thanks.
I don't know if it's going to be right or not, but I like the boldness anyway. I like the fact that you got off the fence on that one.
Yeah. Yeah, no. This time, I just looking at it, and it just doesn't seem like at home where the Patriots are just incredible this year, and playing against a Dolphins team that struggled last week.
Okay,
well, I thought they'd actually beat the Ravens. Mm-hmm. They really struggled. I don't mm-hmm. think the Ravens are that good.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see them coming up here where they're a different team than they were in September, and the Patriots are a different team. They have a lot more weapons going for them, and Brady's getting rid of the ball and moving around a lot better in the pocket. It's just a different situation. So.
This is true. This is true. All right, 35-9, says Sean in Vancouver. You the man, Sean. All right, is it Herman or Herman in California? Herman, you there?
Yes, hello?
Hello, Herman. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? This it's Mervin.
Mervin, thank you. All right.
From Miami, California.
Fantastic, Mervin. Thank you.
I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller.
Thanks, Mervin.
I got a hold of you.
Thank you for taking the call.
Great. The thing that I wanted to say was, one, I'm not really worried about our defense. Our defense has come to, and it's just, all of our pickups, for whether if it's through free agency or trade it has worked out for us.
Mm-hmm.
I really love the Alan Branch. Did you see that game against Detroit? How he was pushing the offensive line all the way back to the quarterback.
I
love the penetration with him.
Right.
What he's doing.
Right.
Akeem Ayers has come in, 3 sacks, 1 interception, has done really well. And it looks like Casillas is also doing really good with coverage, coming up, being a good tackler, and so on. What I'm really worried about is our offensive play calling. I think the Patriots are going out of their style of play. I think they're getting a little too pretty on offense. Yeah, we want to get our running offense going, but the thing is, I think we should go with the up-tempo and work through that, and then keep the defense off balance with throwing a couple of runs in there. And I think that will, get the offensive line a little better, so, you know, protecting Brady since he doesn't have to hang on to the ball.
Right.
It's also going to keep the defense off balance.
Right.
With them not knowing, are they going to run, or are they going to do play action, or are they going to actually throw the ball? And I love the way Brandon LaFell has fitted in with the team.
Mm-hmm.
He's coming up really big, except for the last few weeks. He had a couple of downtime, and maybe that's because he hurt his shoulder during 2 weeks ago.
Right.
But I really think Gronk is Gronk. No one's going to be able to one stop that guy, which will also open up Justin Wright, which he's a touchdown machine. And Edelman, I can't say more about Edelman. That guy's a monster. He's a mini Gronk or whatever. But I really think that there's no one that's going to be able to stop us, whether if it's in the playoffs or if we make the Super Bowl. This team is just fully prepared, whether if it's defense, offensive, or the kicking team.
Right.
So my prediction, it will be 41-12, no touchdowns.
41-12. You're going to give the Dolphins 4 field goals in that one then?
Yes.
Okay. 41-12. You sound supremely confident.
I am. Basically, I'm not really worried about offense. Offense, they always get it going when it's needed, but we have proven this year that this defense can win for us, so especially with the last game against Phillip Rivers. So I'm really confident in them right now. So I'm really looking forward to watch the game this weekend, and Patriots all the way.
Good stuff. Mervin, thanks for taking the time to call. Appreciate your participation here. I guess I'm mildly surprised. You know, Miami did win this game, but it was so long ago, nobody seems to be giving them a snowball's chance, and you know what? Chad in the ATL, thanks for hanging on, Chad. You're in the playbook.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Good, man. How's it going today?
It's going good. I'm actually always excited whenever you have your analysts from the other teams come in, because they always seem so down on their own team.
They do, don't they?
It gets me pumped up for the game.
I happen to not agree with Armando. He covers the team a hell of a lot more closely than I do. But to me, there's just always been this kind of sixth sense about Miami. Just kind of like, you know, the rivalry always seems to kick in with the Jets as well. So I got to tell you, I mean, I don't see 41-9, and I don't see 37-12, and I don't see any of that this week.
I don't either. And, but I will say this, there's a lot of new faces that are actually old faces that are going to be playing. But you got to think, John, back when that first week, you know, JoJo LaFell, as he likes to call himself now, he's a completely different person. You know, Brady and him, they haven't really got their old trust thing down. Gronk wasn't really trusting in himself, I don't think. There was no blunt, as the previous analysts did, but There's a lot of new players out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I said, or older players that have been out. But there's another key player that, you know, that wasn't there out there that first week, and that's Brandon Browner.
Mm-hmm.
I think Brandon Browner's going to have a pretty good impact on this game, because I don't think Ryan Tannehill is very familiar with him, and I think that Browner will have a big impact on this.
Well, I think Browner will have an impact at some point. I hope that it's not the wrong kind of impact. And some of the things that I've been, you know, harping on over the last couple of weeks is, you know, Browner's had, first of all, he leads the Patriots in penalties accepted. So I just hope that there's not a crucial one again, like last week, that took a pick six off the board. And again, it was a bad call by the officials, and the NFL said as much. And we've discussed that this week, but The fact is, it doesn't rub out the fact that he committed something that he got flagged for, and the flag wasn't picked up and put back in the official's pocket. It was accepted, and it rubbed out a touchdown. And, you know, when you get to, you know, time, when it's time to put these things under the microscope, that's something that can kill you and also beat you. So that's a little bit of a concern. That being said, if we could ever figure out a way to, you know, for him to keep the thump on, but maybe one or two less flags a game. I mean, if you're going to give him one, all right, we give him one. It's just the ones that keep drives alive and now take points off the board that really don't sit well. And that, to me, is a concern going forward.
Yeah, I agree. My prediction, though, I'm going to go with I don't think it's going to be a complete blowout, but I really think that our defense is a lot better than it was. So I'm going to give the Dolphins at least one touchdown. I'm going to say 30-10.
30-10?
Not a complete blowout. I think it's a four touchdown, but, you know.
Okay.
that's not good.
Not a complete blowout, but just a sort of a semi-blowout.
Semi-blowout.
30-10. All right. Good stuff, Chad. Thank you. You got it. Chad in Atlanta. Before we get to the guru, Dave in Connecticut, you're up next in the playbook. Dave, you there?
Hey, what's up, John? How we doing?
Hi, Dave.
How are you doing? Listen, I think, I'm listening to some of the guys, and I think the running game is going to be key for us in this game with the Dolphins. It's a two-edged weapon here. Okay, when you have a pass rushing team with, like, Cameron Wake and those other guys, you know, when you run at them, it puts them on their heels.
Mm-hmm.
And opens up the passing game as well for Brady. All right? You know, I love when we go five wide. You know, I mean, it just, you know, it's an exciting, you know, it's an up-tempo. I really don't think we need to up-tempo against Miami. If we establish a running game, it's going to establish a passing game. It's going to open up Gronk. It's going to slow down that pass rush, okay, because my main concern in this game is the offensive line. I think the last couple of weeks, you know, and I'm not going to pick out players, I think, as a whole, they haven't played as good as they play. You know, they seem to be pulling together, you know, in this 6-8 gauntlet we've been through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they seem to be playing well enough to, you know, all right, give them a sack here or a sack here,
mm-hmm.
you know. But they've regressed the last couple of weeks, I think.
Okay.
Not so much giving up sacks, but with the pressure of being allowed on time. Okay.
Okay.
Which are going to lead to sacks. Okay.
Okay.
You know, so I think the number one goal here is to establish a running game and then have the passing game come off that. Defensively, you know, totally different team here, okay? You didn't have Alan Branch. You didn't have, you know, you didn't have Browner. Somebody said about Browner. And you know what? I like Browner. I really do. And, you know, I as a fan, I understand what you're saying about the penalties. But you know what? He is such a force out there. That, you know, I hate to say it, but maybe receivers are almost afraid to go against him because they know they're going to get hammered.
Right.
You know? And then you have, you know, Darrell on the other side, okay? And, you know, Akins is playing his butt off. And the pickup of Alan Branch, what a pickup, you know, defensive pickup that was. I mean, it's just a totally different team. And I think, you know, with the silverback, you know, he had a nice game last week. It's just, I think we will control Miami. I really do.
Okay. All right.
Miller, I'm not taking anything away from Miller. I really don't.
All right. What about a score then, Dave?
If I can get away from him, we can make him one-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. And they're going to be playing catch-up.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to make mistakes.
Okay. What do you think about the score?
I'm saying 31-14.
31-14 Patriots. All right, that's a little...
It's hat and T-shirt day for everybody.
Hat and T-shirts for everyone. Absolutely. Dave in Connecticut on the record with 31-14. I got to admit that, I'm like I said a couple of moments ago, I'm a little surprised at the... I guess I shouldn't be. This, after all, is Patriots radio. But I'm a little surprised that because of what, you know... Miami did back in week one, that there aren't more people that aren't taking more seriously this game, and the fact that Miami has to win this game to keep their own, you know, slipping postseason hopes alive, and puts a little bit more of a of an added sense of pressure on their backs. And, you know, I just, you know, they've got more to lose here than clearly New England does. Although if New England lost the game, you might say goodbye to a bye. It's possible. You'd need some help still to be able to accomplish what your goal might be to set out. The first goal is to win the division title. So I think that might be, you know, impetus enough for the Patriots. I'm going to go, as I said earlier, I am going to go with the Patriots to win the game, but I just think it's going to be more of a struggle than most are imagining. Right now I'm leaning to 30-20. And I'm leaning toward that because I think, you know, Miami's ground game could get back in check. I also think that, you know, the kicking game will stay at least clean for the time being. I think they'll get a couple of touchdowns out of it. One of them could even come off of a miscue and set them up in a short field situation, which is, you know, what happened, you know, last week in a sense. So I'm just going to go with 30-20. It may not be a game where you're going to have to sit on the edge of your seat and bite your nails at the end of it. I just seem to think that Miami's going to have a little more fight than some are giving them credit for. So let's see how that goes. And at this time, we welcome in the one and only.
Good afternoon. My name is Russell, and I am a wilderness explorer in Tribe 54, Sweat Lodge 12. Are you in need of any assistance today, sir?
It's time to go around the NFL with football guru Russell Baxter on Patriots Playbook.
I'm in great need of assistance, sir, you know, because I'm trying to tell people that, you know, this game is relevant and this game is a completely different story than what we saw back in week one when Miami manhandled the Patriots on the line of scrimmage. Mr. Baxter, good day to you, sir.
Good day to you, too. And I just heard your prediction of New England 30, Miami 20.
Yes.
John, I love and respect you, but I can't agree with that.
Okay.
Whatsoever.
Please tell me why then.
Because I picked New England 31-20.
You suck.
I know we'll get to that game later, but that was just too easy. I just put my picks, you know, my matter of facts that I do for Sports Blog.
And, of course.
You know, my column that's sweeping the floor, not the nation. But I actually picked 31-20 as well.
So. Did you really? No word of a lie. Oh, that's unbelievable.
mine was posted about an hour ago.
Oh, well, so. I didn't peek. I swear I didn't peek.
In fact, didn't. I know you didn't. Let's be honestly, a lot of times you and I think very, very alike about the flow of a football game.
True. It's
and
true.
Football games are about flow a lot of time. Not flow from Progressive, the one who sells insurance. Flow and tempo is a lot to do. Like, I was getting blasted today on Bleacher Report by some, with this young, I'm assuming is a young man.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had the audacity to suggest that Sean Hill would throw three interceptions tonight.
Ooh.
And I'm picking Arizona to win 14-13 in a game in which I suggest that both Sean Hill and Drew Stanton go see a movie. But that's not knocking them. But the two hottest pass rushers in the league right now are St. Louis and Arizona.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they are really, you know, we've seen what the Rams have done in the last couple of weeks.
Right.
Arizona has 23 sacks in its last five games.
Wow, that's extraordinary. Yeah. And we can't get 23 all season.
Right, exactly. So this young man was like, well, how's he going to throw three interceptions? I said, sir, Peyton Manning can throw six in a game, then Sean Hill can throw three.
Yeah. I suppose.
Okay. I didn't say he was going to throw nine.
Yeah.
I said three. We saw Geno Smith throw three in one quarter.
That is
so
true.
I don't think that, but it's always just kind of funny, you know, how people interpret different things in terms of statistically. But I find more times than not you and I are on the same page because I think there's a lot between us that is old school and the fact that we've seen this game for a long, long time and we totally understand that literally anything can happen. When you say that to people, they look at you and you think you're giving you the company line.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Literally anything can happen. Because the best part about football, and I've said it 100 times, maybe 200, the ball isn't round.
Nope. It takes funny, weird, silly, goofy bounces.
Yes, it does, and that's one. That's my favorite thing about the game of football.
Absolutely. Well, you brought up tonight's game, and so you know the Rams arguably could be one of the hotter teams in the league right now at home against a Cardinals team that forever and a day, every week seems that they still have to prove themselves since Drew Stanton is the quarterback.
Yeah, they do, and I go back to what we talked about when Carson Palmer first got hurt, which ironically was in the game against the Rams when they played in Arizona, and. The Rams were ahead in that game, 14-10, and then in a blink of an eye, it was 31-14. Drew Stanton came in and threw a bomb to John Brown. Patrick Peterson had a pick six. Antonio Cromartie picked up a fumble and ran it back. They scored, I think, 21 in the fourth quarter and pulled away. But the Cardinals all year, to me, have not been a team that's quarterback reliant. They've been team reliant. The concern with me now with them is now Tyrann Mathieu is hurt. Now Andre Ellington is hurt. And by the way, out of the complete blue, Kerwin Williams last week?
Yes, Williams, yes. And I'm
using the line for people who understand commercials. If you want to know who was the star in that game last week, Ask Kerwin Williams.
Oh, great. You think anybody will pick that one up, Russell? I mean, anybody going to get that?
I hate to paint a broad brush, but yeah. I'm hoping some people will.
I give you the drum riff, but Kevin had to go to the mailroom, so ba-dunk.
Is that what you call it now?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know what it is, but, you know.
Okay, the mailroom technically the men's bathroom is the mailroom.
It's called the mailroom, correct. That's absolutely right. You know, I kind of look at this week around the NFL and really just want to call it survival week because every game, with one or two rare exceptions, is a matter of survival and staying in the hunt for at least one of the two teams, if not in most cases, both of the teams involved. I'll give you, for instance, here. Sunday afternoon, Steelers playing at the Falcons. Now, that may or may not thrill you, but, well, the Steelers are certainly in the thick of things at 8-5, and the Falcons are still in the thick of things at 5-8 in the NFC South. So almost every game has something riding on it, which is the beauty of this of Week 15 in the league.
Well, we have such an unusual situation that's going on, especially in the AFC. In the AFC, you are either in it or completely out of it.
That's right.
There's no middle ground. We have 12 teams in the AFC that are above 500. 12.
Mm-hmm.
The Jets, the Raiders, the Titans, the Jaguars are all 2-11.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to talk about, you know, some empty space between the penthouse and the outhouse. I mean, it's stunning. Now, I bring this up for this reason. I did a piece on this, you know, another shameless plug.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, John, only six teams in the AFC finished with winning records. That was the six playoff teams.
Right.
The year before that, only six teams in the AFC finished with winning records. Those were the six playoff teams. The year before that, 2011, only six teams in the AFC finished with winning records. Five of them went to the playoffs. The 8-8 Broncos won the West, and Tennessee at 9-7 stayed home.
Right.
So, I'm not going to say they're going to be 12 winning teams. I think that's impossible. But there could be 8 or 9 winning teams in the AFC, which means 3 of them aren't going to the playoffs, and that's crazy. And the same thing in the NFC, not as dramatic because you've got some middle of the road teams. Like Minnesota. I can't say Chicago. They've been mathematically eliminated, okay?
Right.
But you've got some middle-of-the-road teams. You've got the unusual situation in the NFC South. You've got possibly a 10-6 or 11-5. Maybe that doesn't make the play. I mean, this is because it's so bottom-heavy as far as the bad teams have been really bad, it's made for an unusual situation in terms of figuring out the playoffs. And I said this a couple of weeks ago. It's going to be easier to pick out the first 5 picks in the draft this year before we figure out the playoffs.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. In fact, I opined a little bit about that week as well. Seems like it's going to be easier to figure out who's going for the number one draft pick as opposed to who's getting in the playoffs. Absolutely.
It's crazy. They're all and by the way, the two and I know you asked me about this because it's a divisional, but the Jets play the Titans this year, a pair of 2-11 teams.
Mm-hmm.
And I know in swingers they said double down on 11. I don't think anybody's doubling down on this game.
No. Well, let's deal with the two divisional games. You mentioned the Jets and the Titans, and obviously wouldn't normally talk about 2-11 teams, with the exception of that the Jets are actually on next week's schedule for the Patriots, and the Rex death watch is obviously already begun. It's well underway. I just seem to think, though, that, you know, whether it's this week or next week, somehow, some way, those guys who like playing for their coach, like their coach, don't want him to leave, but know that it's probably inevitable, they're going to do something that's going to surprise some folks, and I'm not sure which direction that's going to go.
Yeah, listen, they'll play hard for them, and when they get around to New England, they'll play hard against New England. I mean, it's a rivalry in some senses, although it's been a lopsided rivalry for the most part, but there's still those remnants of, you know, the playoffs and all that. So, but, you know, you can make a case right now that the Tennessee Titans might be the worst team in the league. And they're going to trot Jake Locker back out this week because Zach Mettenberger's out for the season. They've gone through three different quarterbacks. You know, last week they were embarrassed at home by the Giants. You know, the one thing about the Jets is, for the most part, they play hard. Okay? They've laid a few eggs this year, but for the most part, they still remain physical. And that's been the disappointing aspect of the Tennessee Titans. So I think the Jets go in there. And by the way, this is actually a battle, as you well know, of the old Titans versus the newest Titans.
That's correct.
But the New York Jets were the New York Titans first 3 years AFL.
That is correct.
So
I like that.
You pick the Titans to win this game, it's a lock.
Yep, it's a lock. You're going to win one way or the other. The other divisional game, Packers at the Bills. The Bills, like Miami, at 7-6, you know, hanging on for dear life. The Bills do have this game at home. It's not going to give them a puncher's chance, but, you know, if the Packers are a Super Bowl contender, then, you know, the championship teams usually figure out a way to win these kind of games.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't usually do this with the quarterback thing, but it's just kind of funny. You know, 1 week after having to deal with Peyton Manning in Denver, Aaron Rodgers comes to town.
Right.
And then in 2 weeks, the Bills get Tom Brady again.
Right. That's just their luck, isn't it?
It's pretty. And listen, Aaron Rodgers, I know I know about the streak at home, but 35 touchdowns and three picks, that's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, now I will say this, Green Bay's defense, the run defense can be had. Buffalo will run it a lot. It'll be interesting to see if they can put any kind of pressure on Aaron Rodgers. I'm picking Green Bay to win, but I'm just throwing this out for historical purposes because I have no idea what it means. The Green Bay Packers are 0-5 lifetime at Buffalo.
Wow, that's a good one. That's a good one.
I don't think it means anything in this instance, but it's one. You know how this works. The goofiest things sometimes happen.
Yep.
Okay?
Yeah.
And listen, we've seen the Bills lose. It's not like the Packers are undefeated. All their games they've lost this year are obviously all on the road and all by double digits. 20 to Seattle, 21 to the Saints, and 12 to the Lions. So, I mean, never say never always applies, but anytime you can throw a never out there, I think it's always interesting. And like I said, the 0-5 Packers, spanning many generations and many eras, but for what it's worth, there it is.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that. Leave it to you to come up with a good tidbits.
Tid. We call them tids.
Tids. Like the tids. Three games that I would call also this week championship caliber. Broncos at Chargers, 49ers at Seahawks, Cowboys at Eagles. We'll start with Broncos and Chargers, largely because the Broncos right there are tied with the Patriots at 10-3 for the top spot in the AFC. Chargers are 8-5, still breathing down their necks, having just lost to the Patriots. The Chargers have this at home. They have to feel like this is a must-win for them if they've got a, you know, legitimate shot of postseason play, do they not?
Oh, they absolutely do. The Chargers last week got off to the fast start, then they got shut down, and we'll talk more about the Patriots and how physical they've become in a little bit. You know, everybody's pointing at Peyton Manning as if he's doing something wrong. I know he didn't throw a touchdown pass last week, but they ran for 133 yards and got three rushing touchdowns from C.J. Anderson. But this is the kind of style game that the Chargers played last year against Denver. Earlier this season, they didn't fare so well on a Thursday night. Now, Denver wins, they win the West. It would be the fourth straight year. I still think they'll win the West. It just won't be this week. I like the Chargers.
Like the Chargers at home. Well, that would certainly benefit the Patriots if the Patriots can win this week at home. In the NFC, the 49ers struggling mightily, reeling, maybe even saying goodbye eventually to Jim Harbaugh. And I'm very intrigued about him going across the bay to Oakland to the offseason, which could be an interesting story in its own right. Seahawks have them at home, but why do I get the sense that the Niners might have one last punch to throw?
I think they might have one last punch, but they could also miss.
Yep, swing and miss, that's true.
Because we haven't seen much punch out of the 49ers, especially on offense. This is a team that's near the bottom of the league in scoring this year. This was a team last year, John, that averaged they've scored the same amount of points as the Washington Redskins, 244 points in 13 games. This is a team last year that was over 400, which means you average 25 a game. They're stagnant. Their offensive line's disappointed for a lot of different reasons. Colin Kaepernick looks like he's slinging the ball rather than throwing the ball. The running game is non-existent. Yes, I think they have a puncher's chance, but I think they might get punched. And Jim Harbaugh's never lost three games in a row as the Niners head coach until now.
Yeah, I was about to say he may be getting ready for that. Cowboys at the Eagles, both teams at 9-4, so the winner here is clearly a front runner in the NFC East. The Cowboys are an extraordinary 6-0 away from spaceship Jerry Jones in Arlington, Texas, which means they're 3-4 at home. So 6-0 away, can they continue that in Philly?
Well, listen, I picked Philadelphia to get to the Super Bowl, and who's saying they won't? You saw what happened on Thanksgiving Day.
Yep.
256 yards rushing by the Philadelphia Eagles against a Dallas team that looked ill-prepared for anything Chip Kelly threw at him. And the thing that stood out the most for me about that game, John, was Dallas's offensive line has been a shining star this year. That's not the knock to Marco Murray and Dez Bryant and Tony Romo and all those guys.
Mm-hmm.
But we know how good they have been. Zach Martin, Travis Frederick, Tyron Smith. It's been a great performance by them. But in that Philly game, it was the first time all year that you saw their offensive line dominated not only run blocking, but in pass protection. They were dominated by the Eagles front seven. Now, I want to flip the switch here for a second.
Go.
Last week, as you know, the Cowboys and Bears played on Thursday night. So the Cowboys played back-to-back Thursday games.
Mm-hmm.
Seattle played Philadelphia. Just like Chicago and Dallas, Seattle and Philly both played on Thanksgiving. They got three extra days. Okay?
Right.
Now, Philly comes off a game in which they went from 256 yards rushing to 57 yards rushing, had the ball for 45 plays opposed to Seattle's 85 plays, and now the Cowboys have the three extra days rest to prepare more for Chip Kelly's offense and to get a little more physically fit. I pick the Eagles to win the Super Bowl. I think Dallas gets revenge here and wins in Philadelphia.
Wow, I like that, though. That's pretty good. But I like the way that you go about reasoning it. You know, sometimes it comes true, sometimes it doesn't. We all know that. But, sometimes you just kind of go with a hunch. I actually kind of like the Cowboys this week, too, for no other reason other than that 6-0 number away from home jumps out at me and tells me that they're not awed and they're not blown away by anybody. They beat Seattle in Seattle earlier this year, which, you know, stunned everyone. And while they've struggled from time to time, and you can certainly make a case for, well, they've probably overused DeMarco Murray a little bit, he's been spectacular. Tony Romo has been Tony Romo, and I'll just kind of leave it at that. Never been a huge fan, but at least he's been effective for the Cowboys. This is the week where Dallas, shows that they belong in the same breath as Green Bay and Seattle and even Philadelphia to an extent. And I think they managed to do it. I think it'll be, extraordinarily close, but I kind of agree with you here.
Yeah, I mean, I've been impressed with what Dallas has done game plan all year. The fact that they have stuck to their guns all year, because how many times have we seen them, well, we're ahead, let's throw the ball. We're behind, let's throw the ball. It's halftime, let's throw the ball.
Yeah.
It's bye week, let's throw the ball.
Right.
They've stuck to their guns. And as I've said about DeMarco Murray, he can sleep in February and March, right?
Yes.
Are people going to start getting concerned with Le'Veon Bell in Pittsburgh? How many times has he touched the ball the last 3 weeks? 96, I think?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it is what it is. But the one thing about DeMarco Murray is also not taking a tremendous amount of shots either. And again, Dallas defense highly suspect.
Yes.
But I just like the mindset of the Cowboys right now because they have bounced back from adversity a couple of times this year. And this is not an indictment of Mark Sanchez. This is more of a team having extra time to prepare for something that I don't think they were too familiar with, to be honest with you. I don't know how much Rod Marinelli and that coaching staff knew about Chip Kelly's offense. They've had a lot of extra time now.
They have had that extra time. That's true. All right, let's roll it back then to the Dolphins at the Patriots. Back here for the 1 o'clock kickoff on Sunday. New England's coming off a pretty solid road win at San Diego. The Dolphins have, you know, I guess the Dolphins have really had me scratching my head most of the season. After they beat New England back in week one, I thought, well, maybe this is the year that the Patriots finally get, you know, if not their comeuppance, they really get a strong challenge from within the division. And before the year started, I don't think anybody really thought that that might happen. In fact, if you looked at the other three teams, I would have said that the consensus was that the Jets might have been in the best position to challenge the Patriots from amongst the other three teams. As it turns out, Buffalo has been a little better than advertised. You can make an argument that Miami has been as well, but when you listen to it from the Miami perspective, and we just cut off the line with Armando Salguero a little while ago, Russell, it's a huge disappointment for this Miami team for them to be where they are, especially in light of the fact that they beat New England back in week one. Do you have a fixation on these Dolphins and the road that they've traveled this year and whether or not they should be considered a contender or a pretender?
I think they haven't learned to close the deal. And they had the golden opportunity to beat Denver in Denver and squandered an 11-point lead when they looked like they were out playing the Broncos for about three quarters.
Right, right.
Last week, they're up 10-0 at home against the Baltimore team that does not have Haloti Ngata.
Right.
Okay? And didn't take advantage of that as well. Plus, the last 3 or 4 weeks, especially the last 3 weeks, the Dolphins' run defense has been on vacation. Gave over 200 yards to the Broncos, almost 300 yards to the Jets, even though they beat the Jets. And then last week, Justin Forsett, and arguably the most improved offensive line in the league in Baltimore, ran roughshod on them last week. And that's certainly a concern. This is a team that can get after the quarterback. We saw that against Tom Brady in week one. It's a team that has gotten a little better in terms of forcing turnovers. But you don't blow double-digit leads 2 times in 3 weeks, and that is going to wind up costing them dearly. And the Patriots have a chance here to win division title 6 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they'll get it done. You and I are off by a point in terms of the prediction. I think it'll be close maybe for a bit. But the one thing that impresses me more about New England every week is watching how physical they become. I know Brandon Browner is rolling up more penalties than any of the Boston Bruins. but he has helped bring a physicality to that defensive unit that we haven't seen in quite a few years.
Well, he has, and I think that's why a lot of people dismiss, you know, what he's done is just saying, oh, well, I like the way he brings the thump and he brings an attitude. And I certainly get that. I understand that. And I think it actually has been good for this team. But last week's penalty that, you know, the NFL has since said was a mistake when he went high,
right,
you know, on the tight end there. That took away a pick six. That happens in a playoff game. You might end up losing that game because everything is really so magnified and everything is just kind of examined like a chess move. So I'm that concerns me a little bit with him being able to play with that kind of reckless abandon without realizing what the ramifications might be of that reckless abandon. I think that is a concern, and I hope that that's able to sort of be harnessed somehow.
Well, I think it will be. I think my more point is not the fact that I'm looking at Brandon Browner as the leader of the defense. I think his attitude in terms of being physical has rubbed off on the rest of the team. Now, he's got to learn to play a little more in control, okay?
Yeah.
Like I said, too many penalties. But you've got enough good players on there who can up their game physically without doing some silly or stupid things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because once you develop that mindset, and Seattle clearly has it, and got it even more so when Bobby Wagner and Cam Chancellor came back. Once you develop that mindset, and again, we haven't seen that. The Patriots teams that won those Super Bowls, you know, we talk so much about Brady and Vinatieri and Belichick. those defenses beat you up. They beat the Rams up at the Superdome. I don't have to tell you that. Okay? It was very much like the Bills beat up the Giants in Super Bowl 25. Gee, what a coincidence. Bill Belichick was around. Physical football wins in this league. Physical football is the key to winning. Okay? It's not just the quarterback play. It's not just, it's all things. But if you can beat up physically the other team, I mean, Patriot fans know that from the two games they lost to the Giants in the Super Bowl.
This is true.
They beat up in those games.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing it back with New England. You see the offensive line firing on all cylinders right now. This is a well-oiled machine. And, you know, even in the game they lost at Green Bay, you had to be impressed with the fact that they went to Lambeau Field, and although they gave up a blank load of yards, they held the Green Bay Packers to two touchdowns at home.
Right. They did. They absolutely did. All right, well, Russell, we're getting down to the favorite part of the year. I mean, not there's no part that's really, you know, any less important than others, but it's a favorite part of the year because these games are more magnified because there's so much more that's riding on the outcome of the result, and which sometimes, you know, makes the result that much more of a toss-up, which makes it much more fun for us to enjoy as consumers and connoisseurs, if you will, of football. And I love the month before the playoffs, and this is where you find out, you know, where the good teams come from and where the bad teams need to work on for next year.
And I like what the NFL did, and maybe they do even more of it. John, we have 48 regular season games left.
Yep.
Okay? 33 are divisional games.
And you definitely agree with that stance taken by the NFL to try to...
I'd love to see the NFL make the final 2 weeks divisional games.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure the scheduling people who happen to be listening to the show just cursed me out how long it takes to put the schedule together. But... You know, I like how they have backloaded things. I know some people don't like the playing each other two times in 3 weeks. So what? Okay? So what? I mean, there are a lot of teams like the Patriots, or I shouldn't say a lot, but a number of teams that are going to close the year with three straight divisional games.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I like that. And the fact that we've had so many division races and no one's in the playoffs right now. I mean, that could all change. Five teams can clinch this week.
Right.
Again, more than two-thirds of the 48 games are divisional games. And by the way, for those of you who think it's always tough to beat a team twice in 1 year, we've had 15 rematches so far this year.
Right.
Sweeps 10, splits 5.
Really? No kidding. How about
and by
that?
By the way, more times than not, throughout the last 15, 20 years since I've been tracking it, there's been exceptions, but more times than not, you get more sweeps than splits. That's why I always laugh at that notion of
evening out.
How many times have you heard people say it's hard to beat a team three times in 1 year?
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's not.
It's actually not, yeah.
Oh, that's statistically wrong.
That's interesting. Sweeps 10, splits 5. Wow.
Right. We have 11 divisional games this week, 6 next week, and then, of course, the full Monty in week 17. And now the only suspense left the rest of the season in terms of what's going to happen is, John, you can start a pool next week. What's going to be the final game of the season on Sunday night?
I don't have it right.
I don't know that yet.
What is it?
What's going to be the final game of the season on Sunday night football?
Don't
know that yet.
The
NFL can flex that one a little later.
So it hasn't been decided. Right. Okay.
Decided.
Right. The last one?
Listen, we'll do the game show next week and let everybody figure that out.
What do you think it should be?
I don't know. Could it be Green Bay-Detroit if the division is still up for grabs? Could it be Pittsburgh-Cincinnati if the division is still up for grabs?
Yeah, both of them.
Yeah, exactly. I think it'll probably involve at least one first-place team. So,
oh, sure.
That's what you would probably have to look at.
Absolutely.
What's going to happen this week? What if the Browns sweep the Bengals?
That's true. Johnny Football this week, baby.
Oh, see, now I just lost money.
I thought
you were going to get through the whole segment without saying his name.
I know. Shame on me. Russell, love talking to you.
I'll be curious to see if this is a roll to the future or just a spark for 1 week.
Yeah, that's...
The Bengals, which by the way, they haven't done since 2002.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's
all
right.
All of a sudden, Cincinnati, precarious.
Very precarious.
Well, they've already lost to Pittsburgh at home.
Right.
They swept the Ravens, but would get swept by the... I'm telling you. The guys over at the NFL trying to figure this out, it's going to be hysterical.
Cursing you as they speak. Always good to talk to you, my man. We'll check in next week.
You got it. I'm off to the wilderness to be a ranger.
Attaboy. Way to go. Be safe. Carry matches. You know, all that kind of good stuff. But put out your fire just like Smokey Bear would. Thank you, Russell. Russell Baxter.
Thank you, Mr. Scout.
You got it. See you next Thursday. Russell Baxter, profootballguru.com. Yep. Bleacher Report, cold hard football facts. He's on them all. Love it all. All right, let's get a quick time in here so we can say hello to our sponsors and then reset it all. We're still taking your predictions. Webradio at patriots.com, 855-PATS-500, at JR Broadcaster, Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook. Prediction Thursday, pick it, Patriots, Dolphins, Sunday, do it now.
Hey, what kind of sub is that?
It's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami.
Subway Big Hot Pastrami?
No, pastrami.
Pastrami!
What? Hey, get back here! Pastrami!
No, pastrami!
Look, it's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami!
Want to split it?
A little late for that.
Get your own Subway Big Hot Pastrami Melt, a monument to flavor loaded with dry rub, pepper-crusted beef, and melty cheese. Enjoy yours with mustard and pickles. Subway, eat fresh.
Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie. Three Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to your TV. Now available for $349 at a Microsoft store near you.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call star NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Can't get enough Patriots Playbook? Find the show in the audio on demand section of Patriots.com. Catch up on live episodes you missed or simply replay your favorite Playbook moments from years past. Get inside the Patriots Playbook with John Rook whenever, wherever. Only on Patriots.com and the official Patriots apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad.
Still time for you to get your predictions here on Hashtag Prediction Thursday inside the playbook for today and the media guide yearbook at stake. If you get the correct score predicted, which we have not had yet this season through the first 14 weeks, so we're still waiting for the first winner. We've gotten close. I have to admit, I'm not sure we're going to get any closer this week with some of these scores looking at it, but then again, I've been wrong before. Could certainly be wrong again. On Twitter, Sean says, my prediction for Sunday is 33-13 win for the Pats. Pats will keep it simple and run it. Kashif, hats and t-shirts, anyone? Oh, yeah. I'm feeling a 35-21 win for the Pats. Honey Badger asks a question, says, what kind of impact do you think Cameron Wake will have on our O-line? Well, I think Wake will definitely be the one that the Patriots will mark because he had such an impact last week, as you heard some of the discussion earlier with Armando Salguero and the fact that the Patriots tackles were beaten like rented mules. So I definitely think that the Patriots will keep an eye and probably even double team Cameron Wake whenever they can. You might even see the sixth tackle eligible come in and chip down on the pass rushers as well in an effort to keep Tom Brady clean, which the Patriots have done. And that was really, in my opinion, one of the catalysts to getting this offensive line back on the same page with each other when early in the year they were struggling. You could see some of that, I think, could see some of that on Sunday. Jacob says, 34-13. Defense doesn't need to make up for bad offensive starts, but still gets three turnovers. Well, Jacob, if it's, they get three turnovers in the game, it won't be 34-13. It'll be larger than that. Just a thought, anyway, about that. We got two on the phones here. Dale is in New Hampshire. Thanks for hanging in, Dale. You're in the playbook.
Hey, how's it going, John?
Good, Dale.
First time caller, long time listener. I wanted to say that I'm going to my first Pats game. Thanks to my wife's great anniversary present.
Fantastic.
Solid game.
Congratulations and happy anniversary. And tell your wife she's the best.
She already knows that.
That's good. That's good.
I think that although our offense seems to be stuttering as of lately, I think that it's going to pick it up this week. Our defense has been solid. I'm looking for a real close game, though. I'm thinking it's going to be 28-23, Pat.
28-23. I think you're thinking a little bit more aligned than the way that I'm kind of going here. I want to go to the side of the majority of our callers and writers and listeners today and say, you know what, I don't think Miami has a chance. I know the PFW guys kind of thought that earlier today. I'm just not willing to go there yet, and I think it's because Miami actually does have a little something to play for, you know?
Yep. Yeah. I don't think it's going to be a blowout by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm hoping that it closes out with a pick six. That would be fantastic.
Pick six would be perfect, and let's make sure that there isn't a penalty call to rub it out.
Oh, yeah. No penalties, Brandon.
Yeah, that would make me very happy. I'd consider that a victory within the victory if he could go a game without committing a flag.
Absolutely.
Sure, Dale, and thank you for the call. I think that's something we should be watching, and we can come back and we can nitpick on that next Tuesday. Here's Chris in New Brunswick. Hey, Chris.
Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
Oh, not too bad.
Excellent.
With the whole Browner thing, I think it'll be surprising if he doesn't get a penalty, but I think the refs target him and throw the flags whenever he's on the field. So that's my opinion. I just seen some plays that have been called that are kind of questionable, and I think it's almost like the bully out on the playground. If he's out there, mm-hmm. all the teachers are after him. So that's my opinion on that.
No, I think you're spot on. I agree with that, and I said that this week. I've written about it. I think he's a marked man, and so that's why you got to go to him and say, "Look, we appreciate you bringing the thump, baby, but you got to watch this because it's killing us, and it's going to kill us, and it's going to do worse than just call back a pick six." So that's something you really, really have to pay good close attention to, because even if it's remotely close, because of his rep now, he's going to get the flag thrown, and it's going to hurt the rest of the team.
That's right. Is Chandler Jones back on the field for Sunday, or is he still out?
He's been practicing. That's all I can tell you. Doesn't mean they're going to activate him. And, again, we won't know for official until 90 minutes before kickoff. But he has been out on the practice field this week.
Now, would it be smart to get him back in these last few weeks, or just to hold him out until after the bye, because we're going to get that bye, we're going to get the first seed, I know that for sure. Do you think it would be wise to hold them out until then?
Well, you know, I'm kind of torn in the whole hold them out, play them thing, you know, when it comes to resting guys and saving them for the playoffs and everything. I'm really kind of old school about this. I'm of the opinion football players play football. I just don't see any benefit really to holding them out, because anybody can get hurt on any given moment, at any given time, at any given point in a football game, because guess what? It's physical! You're going to get hurt. That's what happens. So,
that's right.
You know, if he's ready to go, I think they'll play him. I really do. And I really believe that he should get back out there, because, frankly, there's going to be some rust now that he needs to knock off so he can be, you know, in his stride, we hope, when the playoffs do start in another, you know, month. So I think that would be as good a time as any. I would not be surprised, Chris, and I know this is kind of sitting on the fence here, and I hate sitting on a fence, but I wouldn't be surprised either way. I could see them playing him if he's ready. I could see them sitting him out quite if he's not quite, because they want him to be ready. The only problem is that we're not really given any real indication of that during the week, because they play their cards so close to the vest and they kick us all out, you know, after the first 15 minutes of practice. So there's no real way to tell. The only way that you can get a glimpse really is by looking at the participation report after practice, which you can always find here on the website, usually after 4 o'clock Eastern time, and you know, and then you just kind of have to take a guess, because frankly I've seen guys on the injury report all week and they start, and then I've seen guys who don't even get mentioned on the injury report make the inactive list. So who knows
exactly. Comparing Miami's defense to San Diego's defense, who's stronger?
That's actually a good question. I would tend to say that based on recent play that San Diego might be a little stronger, and that's only because Miami has shown a little bit of a weakness for being susceptible to the run. Now, that flies right in the face of what they were earlier this year, because they were very good. They were in the top one or two in rush defense in the entire NFL through the first, like, 6 to 8 weeks of the season. And then they've given up over 600, and I think it's 661 rushing in the last 3 weeks, which is extraordinarily poor. So I'd say right now San Diego, but let's you know, I'm going to hedge my bet on that one until, you know, that first couple of series are over on Sunday.
Jonas Gray going to be out on the field, or is LeGarrette Blount going to take the majority of the runs week again.
Well, I think LeGarrette Blount is definitely 1A, but I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Gray get more than two carries. You know, somewhere in that somewhere in that 5 to 10 carry range, I think would be about right, and I think it would be deserving. And, you know, I don't see penalizing him any more than he's already been penalized, and if he gets his opportunity, he'll get it.
Okay. I know we're near the end of the show, so I'm going to make my prediction. I'm going to say that the Pats are definitely going to win. We're going to get the hats and T-shirts. It's 27 to, I'd say 17.
What was 27 to 17. 27-17.
Thank you very much, John, for taking my call.
Way to go, Chris. That's good stuff out of you. All right, let's see. On Facebook, Kareem says, AFC champs, baby. I think you mean AFC East, Kareem. You don't want to get ahead of yourself here. 34-16 Patriots. Mary Beth says 23-10 Pats. Ashton goes, Patriots win 27-14. Do you think Gray will get half the overall carries this week? Not half, but I'd really be surprised if he didn't get a handful somewhere in that 6-10 variety. Herman writes in, says, John, I haven't heard anyone mention this, but a big factor in the Dolphins' victory in week one was no Sean Moreno, who ran for over 130 yards, and I think that'll make a difference this week since they don't have the same running game as they did the week one. My prediction is 41-13 Pats, and the defense allows one touchdown that comes in garbage time, so he says. Let's see what else we have here on Facebook. Leslie says, prediction Thursday, Finns 27, Pats 17. Oh, no, Finns 17, Pats 27. He reversed it on me. 27-17, New England. Russell, hey, John Rook. Nice to see you, Russell. My score prediction, Finns versus Pats, 35 Patriots, 24 Dolphins. With a better O-line than the first of the season and Brady moving in the pocket, also not to mention her D 10 times better. Then Blarco from Los Angeles says, with all due respect to the Dolphins, I just don't see them putting up a fight. This is the Dolphins we're talking about. They always choke in the end. They won the last two games against us because both were in Miami. Okay, that is a good point, but they did win them both, you know. He says 34-16, Pats. Onique says, John, my prediction this week will be Pats 34, Fish 10. Fish and company will come in ready to fight, but will implode like they always do in December and to the Pats in December. Gabriel, going with my original pick of Pats 28, Fish 24. So that's the closest prediction I think we've had. 28-24. Our D will hold Moreno to under 100 yards this time. I would imagine they would. And Revis will bottle up Wallace this time. And Tannehill will get some yards, but I think my 24 might be too high. Hats and T-shirt game. Yes, and he did correct himself, Laker. Or Blarco said, no, Sean is on IR. Adam says, hey, John, really tempted to say 27-17 Pats, but I won't. Instead, I'm going to go 34-20 Patriots. So if the score is 27-17, Adam, you lose. You lose. Paul says, John, for hashtag prediction Thursday, the Fish keep it close in the first half before the Pats pull away in the second. A couple of late turnovers help. Pats end up winning 41-24. 41-24 is his prediction on that one. Okay, I like that. That's good. 41-24. Now let's find what we have here on email. Shaban says, Patriots 31, Dolphins 17. Kashif says, John, ain't it great being a Patriots fan, win, lose, or draw? Oh, yeah. Before I jump into my prediction, I want to know something. Are the Finns known to be a good, cold winter team? Come on, really? I know we can have it rough at times to play in Florida during some hot and humid days, so you think these fishes turn into blocks of ices come game days in Foxborough? Okay, time to tap into the Force Yoda style and say, 35-21 to the Pats. Drew writes, obviously Revis is elite. Browner can be physical on short to mid-range passes. Miami's strength. I like this matchup, though. I think the Pats retain their focus to lock up the division at home, 31-17. And then Clinton, son of Drew and Bowie, says Patriots 35, Dolphins 17. Pat in Agawam, Mass. John, as I said during PFW in Progress, Patriots win 38-10. We produce the most balanced offensive game of the year. Defense causes four turnovers. Well, considering that Miami doesn't turn the ball over all that much and they have given up the least amount of points in the entire NFL off of turnovers, that would be extraordinary. But I'll take it, Pat. He says 38-10. Gustavo says, hi there, John. My main concern is on the offensive line protecting Tom Brady and creating running lanes for our backs. If everyone does their job, we should be fine. My score prediction is Patriots 33, Dolphins 24. I think that's a pretty good one, Gustavo. I'm on the same page with you there. Brian in Essex, Vermont. First off, you've made the blanket statement that everyone thought the Pats would win the first game against Miami. Can't speak for anyone, nor would I try, but I actually favored the Dolphins in that game due to it being the first game of the season in Miami with the heat on their side. Miami's record in 80-plus degree weather, first game of the season at home, it's pretty spectacular. Much like the Patriots in cold weather, Miami gains as much of an advantage due to the heat. Never mind the secondary wasn't complete. Never mind we had no idea how the offensive line would work. Never mind Brandon LaFell had no idea, yada, yada, yada. Okay, that's fair, Brian, but it's sort of revisionist history now. I mean, I don't recall any definitive predictions that Miami was going to come out and beat the Patriots' ass on week one. I really don't. And that's with all due respect. I just don't recall it. Everybody was thinking Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl back in September that this team could be a juggernaut. Now, it's kind of turned out that they've put themselves into position after some very hard work and some good fortune has befallen them along the way. That's true. That's true. But the overwhelming majority, Brian, come on, even you have to admit it. Way the hell up in Vermont. Even you have to admit that the overwhelming majority of folks thought the Patriots would win that game. Very few people thought they would lose that game outside of South Florida. He says, now the shoe's on the other foot. It's in the Patriots' house, in the Patriots' weather. Secondary complete. O-line has been decided. Worked together for many weeks now. LaFell is basically Brady's drive starter. Gronk is fully back and then some. So to say you're surprised that people are picking the Pats seems a tad odd. Why? Why does that seem odd? And I don't see a pick from you either, Brian. Where is it? Put up or shut up, baby. Max in San Diego. Patriots Nation, San Diego loves the playbook. You and your crew are superstars here. Next party, we got to have you here. Okay, I'm down. We're going, Kevin. We're going. San Diego. He says, my prediction, Patriots 40, Dolphins 21. The Patriots O-line keeps Wake away from TB12, and they actually get Gray's ass off the damn bench and run him along with Blunt. They need to do to them what they did to the Bungles with those two and three tight end sets. No huddle, shotgun, spread, deep ball to the fell, maybe a shot or two at Timms. On defense, you know me, I say it in one word, attack. Go get Tannehill up front, let Browner hit, Revis do his thing, mix up the blitzes, most of all, stop the run. Thanks, Max. Appreciate the support. Here's Brian, who says, per profootballreference.com, do sweltering kickoffs matter? Dolphins, 160 home games played since 1990. They won 60%. Okay, says that he definitely gave his teammates an edge at home. Well, that's fine, but this game isn't being played in Miami, so I'm not sure what the relevance is to our discussion here. Austin in Toronto says, John, big game for Blunt and Gray. New England 34, Miami 10. James, final score, Pats 51-12. Now we're going off the deep end. Harry in Vegas, after careful consideration, I'm going to say Sunday's game will end up Patriots 30, Dolphins 17. Game will stay close till halftime, then back-to-back scores with the Pats in the third quarter, and our D will take us the rest of the way to a win. That's what he says. The injury report actually is out a little bit early today, so I'll just pass along briefly that there is no change for the Patriots from yesterday. Dominique Easley, as we mentioned off the top of the show, did not participate today. And you had limited participation from Aiken, Connolly, Edelman, Fleming, Hightower, Jones, LaFell, Ninkovich, Vereen, White. No change from yesterday. Brady Full and LeGarrette Blount. The only change was he was removed from the list, the participation list, but he did not participate yesterday. Miami has couple of changes. Walt Akins at safety did not participate. Anthony Johnson with an ankle practiced yesterday did not participate. Defensive tackle And those are the only two changes from Miami's list yesterday. You can get the full list on the Dolphins website and also here on Patriots.com. So there you go. All right, that wraps up this week's programming. That wraps up today's show. Our thanks to Armando Salguero from the Miami Herald and, of course, the one and only pro football guru and Russell Baxter as he joined us every Thursday here inside the playbook. It is hat and T-shirt day on Sunday. Hats and T-shirts for everybody if the Patriots win this game.
Everybody except you and me.
Yeah, everybody except us. We always get left out of the swag. Why is that?
I don't know, and I could use it for my bald head. Especially now that the snow's flying, keep it cold.
That's true.
Keep it warm.
We did have snow today. Well, Kev, we'll have to do something about that. We're going to have to get some swag for your head. So we'll see if they can come up with a sixth straight AFC East Championship. I can't imagine Miami's going to let them take it easily. I think it'll be fun, and I think it'll be an exciting game. And then whatever happens, we'll nitpick it to death on Tuesday right here in the Patriots Playbook. Enjoy the weekend.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.